It's Monday. It's a new month. We got literally three more months of 2023. That's crazy to think, right? It is Monday, October 2nd, 2023, and it's Monday, which means one thing. It's another episode of Monday Evening Quarterback, and it was only fitting that I came in with that music because this is the first show of the month. Shout out to the legendary rap group Bone Thugs and Harmony. But good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you guys are going to sit down and listen to this latest episode of Monday Evening Quarterback. My name is Christian Simpson, and I am the creator. I'm the founder. I'm the NFL and college football analyst, the blogger of a brand called The Daily Blitz, where we specialize in everything football 24/7, 365. I also contribute to a few radio shows as well, but I'll promote all that when we get to the end of the show. Week 5 of college football is officially in the books. I can't believe we're at the halfway mark. And then the playoff talks are going to start to ramp up. I got a lot to say about that. Week 4 of the NFL concludes tonight. We have a Monday night showdown at MetLife between the Seattle Seahawks and the New York Giants. I'll get into that a little toward the end of the show. We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to take some questions and just some comments about things that people had to say about a lot of the action. And as you guys know, I am not alone. The real superstar, and I mean that sarcastically, of the show is here. You know, y'all love him. I'm talking about my producer and my co-host, Mr. Ronnie himself. Ronnie, what's going on?
What's going on, Christian?
Ah, man, you know, it's just another day in paradise. It's another start of a week. It's Monday. The weekends almost feel like 30-minute lunch breaks.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, but week 5 of college football, my friend, is officially in the books. It seems like we go here every time we start an episode of Monday Evening Quarterback. I think you know where I'm going. I'm going to Boulder. USC,
yeah, keep your head on for this one.
USC in Colorado. Now, we all know Colorado suffered their first loss of the year last week against the Oregon Ducks in Eugene. And anyone who watches college football knows that Eugene is such a tough place to play. And Oregon just outplayed them, outcoached them, outsmarted them in every imaginable way possible. This Saturday, they play Caleb Williams, who just happens to be the reigning Heisman. And to be honest with you, I think he's the front runner right now for the award once again. And the USC Trojans, now coming into this game, I said that for Colorado, this is going to be a tougher game for them because Colorado has a better quarterback than Oregon. And that's no knock on Bo Nix, but Caleb Williams is the real deal. USC did win this game by a score of 48-1, and Caleb Williams was just absolute magic at the office. Once again, he went 30 of 40. That's 10 incompletions, okay? Like, understand what I'm saying here. He went 30 of 40, right?
With a
403 yards passing and 6 touchdown passes. With one interception.
He averaged 10.1.
Nah, it's saying here he averaged 13.4 yards per carry.
I'm on ESPN right now. Oh, per carry.
I mean, per pass.
I'm looking at 30 for 40, 403, averaged 10.1, 6 touchdowns, 1 pick, with a QBR at 93.1.
And he was only sacked 2 times. My key coming into this game was Marshawn Lloyd. He was a transfer from South Carolina to USC. 13 carries, 84 yards. So I got to give Colorado some props there, because what's the one thing we've been talking about when it comes to Colorado? They can't run the ball, and they can't do what? They can't stop the run.
Right.
We knew this was going to be a high-scoring game. For a minute, I thought USC was about to blow this one because they were up pretty big, and you got to give Colorado credit because the Buffaloes fought back. They fought back. And they outscored USC by 14 in the fourth quarter. I mean, USC, pretty much, they were just getting everything they wanted in the first half of this game.
Now, let me ask you something real quick. Mm-hmm. If Hunter or Shiloh was in this game, do they win this?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Because they don't have – the reason why they wouldn't have won this game, they don't have the pass rushers to get home. And that's where I think Deion is really going to focus on a recruiting path this year is getting guys that can get to the quarterback. And they need – you know, they need to really bulk up in the interior of that defensive line. They need some dogs on that offensive line as well. Like, don't get me wrong, the left tackle and the right tackle are good, but I'm talking about the offensive guards, the left guard, the right guard, and the center, because teams know how to attack Colorado, and it's right up the middle. Right? I think Travis Hunter and Shiloh Sanders would have made things beyond interesting, but at the end of the day, let's say those two did play, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, USC still had the edge at the most important.
Yeah, I was gonna say I don't think Caleb dropped 6 touchdowns.
How many touchdowns do you think he would have passed?
I think he probably would have had 4, but on the back end, you would have had Shador that would have probably not dropped 4 either. He probably would have dropped 3. It probably would have been the same type of score, but it would have been less scoring.
Yeah, and can we stop with the whole Shador Sanders isn't the real deal? Because this kid balled out on Saturday. God, I'm getting my days confused.
He's still very green. Luckily, he's a junior.
Right.
And if anyone doesn't know what green means, new. He's still very new. I use wrestling terms a lot, so just heads up on that. Yeah. If you're seeing that, so he still has his senior year, and I think he's still only – I think he redshirted?
I believe so. Deion came out
and said that he doesn't want him going pro yet.
Because he's not ready.
No. Well,
because – he's not ready. Because he's not going to really
be the – because he's not going to be the number one pick. That's coming from Shador.
Yeah. I mean, look, this kid really held his own against – in my opinion, the best player in college football yesterday. He was 30 of 45, 371 yards passing, 4 touchdowns and 1 interception. He was sacked 3 times. And guess who the second leading rusher was for Colorado, Ronnie?
Was it Sanders?
Yeah, it was Shador.
Again?
14 carries for 50 yards. So there are 3 things that Colorado needs to worry about come the offseason and when it's time to recruit. Getting some pass rushers, right? So that's number one, because, look, the former defensive player in me cringes when an opposing quarterback's jersey is too clean. You've heard me say that several times, and I've said it on things I preview on the site, which is the Daily Blitz blog, by the way. And I've said it with you on the Nerd Zone. I've said it on the Prime with those guys. I've said it on College Football Showdown. I've said it basically on every show that I've contributed for, both past and currently. You got to be able to get after the quarterback, because if you just drop back and you let that quarterback nickel and dime you all game long, it's going to be a long night at the office, right? So that's aspect number one of it right there. Two, they got to bulk up on the interior of that defensive line. And I don't know if you saw this, but I read that Warren Sapp, one of the greatest defensive tackles to ever play the game, is thinking about taking a job out there for Prime in Boulder next season. And if he can get that defensive line right, they're going to be scary.
But that's the problem, though. You're going from – so the schedule they have, the biggest problem with Colorado is their schedule. And I don't mean that in a bad way. But who do they play? 90% of the time, what is their schedule?
The Big 12.
Big 12 and the Pac-12. What do both of those have in common?
They're teams that – like to push the ball up the field with high-paced offenses.
And?
No defense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you have Shador that's putting up these outrageous numbers. Okay, yeah. What happens if they show up and they play a team like, let's just say, throw it out there. Okay, what is Shador going to do against an Alabama?
Oh. You know what? Let me say, I'm gonna slightly disagree with you on that, because Alabama's not built.
Okay, maybe not Bama, but a SEC defense.
Okay, because, you know, what I was going to say is Alabama, they're not built to stop mobile quarterbacks.
No.
Okay? They're not. Like, look when they lost to Clemson. The first time, right? When Deshaun Watson was quarterbacking the Clemson Tigers. I remember Nick Saban saying himself, I'm onside kicking the ball for us to get the ball back, because Deshaun Watson is the real deal. That's coming from an icon's mouth. And then look at when Clemson had Trevor Lawrence, right? He was mobile too when he was in college. So, yeah, they're not built to limit mobile quarterbacks. So I think Shador could actually do pretty well against the Alabama defense, Ronnie.
But I'm saying, like, okay, but maybe I made that a wrong example. What if you get, like, a SEC defense, like a Georgia?
Oh.
Like an SEC strong defense. Like, a defense you know is that, even if they get to the quarterback, they are going to take you out. I don't think he can hang, because right now the defense he's played have been bad.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because TCU was absolutely horrible. Like TCU couldn't do anything.
No, like I'm looking at next year for them. They got North Dakota State, Nebraska, at Nebraska, and at Colorado State again for their non-conference.
Yeah.
So he's going to do the exact same thing he did.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give you this. Then I'm looking at there. If he stays around for his redshirt senior, he's got Georgia Tech in Wyoming.
Who, Shador does?
Yeah, if he sticks around for his redshirt senior.
Wow.
So there's two teams right there, even at Boulder. Georgia Tech's got a defense, and so does Wyoming.
Yeah, they do.
So,
but look, Colorado, it's safe to say they've come back to reality a little bit. Now, I ain't hating, because that's what a lot of people think I'm doing. But nah, I'm just being a realist. And some of y'all just started watching football 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, y'all are Taylor Swift fans jumping on the bandwagon. Yeah,
exactly. You know, that's all it is. But, I mean, they were punched in the mouth against Oregon. And I think when you punch a finesse team in the mouth, which we're going to get into when we talk NFL, they don't recover.
No.
Like, you have to establish yourself at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the football. That's exactly what Oregon did. But I'll also say this about that game on Saturday, because we were talking during that game. Now you see why I'm not sold on USC, right?
No. And I do have, when you're done, I do have the Heisman updates.
Okay, because USC, this is pretty much Oklahoma West. Okay? What I mean by that is Lincoln Riley. Not taking anything away from Lincoln. Lincoln might be the best offensive-minded guy in the country today. Okay? You saw what he did in Oklahoma, 2017. You replaced a legend and Bob Stoops, and your first season, Baker Mayfield wins the Heisman, right? You get to the college football playoff and you lose an absolute thrilling game. I know you remember that game.
Yep.
You lose an absolute thrilling game to the Georgia Bulldogs at the Rose Bowl at that. Yeah. Baker goes number one overall, right? Then you have Kyler Murray the next year. Same stuff. Kyler wins Heisman. He gets selected number one overall by the Arizona Cardinals. You know, he further developed Jalen Hurts a little bit more, because Jalen Hurts was not the passer that he is now until Lincoln Riley got hands on him. and was able to work with him, right? You see what he's done with Caleb Williams. So all in all, Lincoln Riley knows how to work with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
It's safe to say he's the quarterback whisperer, right? You know what you're going to get from Lincoln Riley coach teams. The offense is going to be one of the two or three best in the country. They're going to move the ball up the field. They're going to push the ball up the field. And the passing attack is going to be extremely prolific. Okay? It's the defense that's holding them back. And they just do a lot of things that show the lack of basic football fundamentals. And what I mean by that is they're missing tackles. They're not communicating in the back end of the secondary. They're blowing gap assignments. They're not where they need to be. And when all that happens, that usually means that it's the defensive coordinator, because I know he brought Alex Grinch with him to California when he took the job. And Alex Grinch was his defensive coordinator when he was in Oklahoma. Might be time to move on from Alex, Lincoln. And just think about it like this. Ronnie, echo my sentiments here. Tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Let's just say USC's defense played like Georgia does, who we're about to get into next. Because I got something to say about them. Let's just say USC's defense complemented the offense. You know what you're going to get from the offense, but, you know, the defense can get off the field, be physical, and not just depend on turnovers, because that's a problem with a Lincoln Riley coach defense. Just because you force turnovers, that doesn't mean you're a good defense. Just imagine if the defense played as good as the offense. I think this is the scariest team in college football. It's not even close.
Right. No, I agree.
Yeah. So, USC, I don't know. They're good. But it's almost in a way that their offense is their defense, because
It's the old Oregon teams.
Under Chip Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it was the straight, like, it was like the old Sun teams, the 24-second rule. Where it was just get to the ball, snap the ball, and go.
Yeah. No huddle. No huddle.
Yep.
Yes, that was my son barking. That's just what he does. Yeah. But
so, I mean, real quick, if you want the updates to that, you're right. Caleb Williams is...
Yeah, he's the favorite right now.
On FanDuel, he's plus 170. Everywhere else, he's about 180.
Okay, who are the other guys that are on the list with him?
On FanDuel, they're all... It's pretty much in this order. It's just odds are different, so check your books around you.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Penix Jr. is second at about 4-1. Bo Nix is third at 9-1, and Quinn Ewers is 9-1.
And then yeah.
Then you have, like, Jordan Travis and Dylan Gabriel.
You did say Michael Penix, right?
Yep, Junior. He's the second.
Yeah, he...
Honestly, he's the guy... Honest to God, it's either him or Ewers that I think might win it this year.
Yeah, he's balling out this year. It's him... It's between three guys. It's between Quinn, it's between Caleb, and it's between... Michael Penix.
You know, there's one guy on this that is very high, but if they go undefeated, could win the Heisman, and that's Van Dyke.
From Miami.
Miami. He's 35-1.
Wow. I'll tell you this. You know, we always talk about guys having those Heisman moments. Quinn Ewers kind of has one. You go into Tuscaloosa. And you smack Alabama?
Well, I'll say this. If they run the table and go unbeaten, beat Oregon twice by margin, it's yours to lose.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Now, here's what else I wanted to discuss about college football. Just a couple more things before we get to the phone lines. The Georgia Bulldogs got a little bit of a scare. Something wasn't right with them. You know, I think they overlooked Oregon. They overlooked...
Auburn.
They overlooked Auburn. I mean, look, I get it's a rivalry game. You know what I'm saying? And teams get up for for that big opponent. They do. And honestly, I think...
Could they have been looking ahead to Kentucky?
No, I don't even think it was that. Georgia's a younger team now. You know, a lot of the rosters from these last two title-winning teams are where? In Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're all Eagles.
Yeah. I don't want to say that they overlooked Auburn, but you have to realize something. When you're the team that's hoisting what everybody wants, which is the college football playoff national championship trophy, when you're the defending champions, you have a bullseye on your back. And you're going to get everybody's best effort because this is the best I've seen somebody play Georgia maybe since Alabama in the 2021 SEC title game.
I was going to say, there's one other team that I would say that played them just as good. And they South Carolina? No. It was last year in Missouri.
And Ohio State.
Ohio State
played them pretty tough, too.
Yeah, but I'm saying Missouri, dude, Missouri had them on the ropes the entire game. It literally came down to the final 2 minutes where they had to put a field goal through to beat them.
Yeah. But Georgia, their run defense didn't look all that great the other day. I mean, Peyton Thorne, the quarterback for Auburn, was Auburn's leading rusher. 12 carries, 92 yards. But guys were able to kind of run the football on them. Just kind of looking overall at the numbers for everything with Georgia. Carson Beck, he grew up yesterday. Hostile environment, on the road. He goes 23 of 33, 318 yards rushing. And 318 yards passing, excuse me. One touchdown and one interception. Brock Bowers, that's a grown man. That's a grown man.
You gave it to your best player at the end of the game. That's the reason they won.
8 receptions, 157 yards receiving, and one touchdown. An average damn near close to 20 yards per reception. And I told you who he reminds me of, right? Have I ever mentioned
Gonzo.
Nah.
Gates, sorry.
No, not even him. Neither one of them. I mean, one's a Hall of Famer. One's about to be a Hall of Famer. I see more. He's kind of like a quicker Jeremy Shockey to me.
Okay.
Yeah, I took it back. Yeah, he's a quicker Jeremy Shockey to me. Did you see that touchdown?
Yeah.
Just
the two catches leading up to that touchdown, the one-handed grabs.
I don't even think Auburn wanted to try and tackle him. Seriously. Yeah, so Georgia is 5-0. Auburn gave them all they could handle. And I'm kind of glad Georgia played in this type of game because the blowouts can kind of get boring after a while. Like, if you expect to blow someone out, it's almost going to become too easy for you.
Well, look at Bama like 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
What about them?
When they just freaking ran through the table and it's like, all right, let's get to the SEC title game.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But here is my alarming stat about this game. Georgia gave up 219 yards rushing.
Yeah.
To Auburn. And we know how stout of a defense Georgia has had the last couple of years, but that just goes to show you, anybody can be dealt with physically. And if you want to handle a physical team, you got to be able to be physical with them right back. So if you're a team on Georgia's schedule moving forward, I think Auburn kind of unveiled the blueprint on how you can get at the Bulldogs. Run the football. Get that push up front. Establish yourself at the line of scrimmage and run the football. Anything else you want to add about this game, Ronnie?
No, not really, because there's not a lot to add. It's just exactly how it looked. It's just they ended up getting, like, they were sleepwalking. There was a lot of people that I looked at them, and I looked at Penn State were sleepwalking.
Yeah, early on, and then they turned it on when they had to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Michigan, they go to Lincoln, Nebraska to play the Cornhuskers, and they, I mean, this game wasn't even close.
Yeah, corn got corned.
Look, by the fourth quarter, it's a 35-0 lead. Yeah, Nebraska, they did score a touchdown in the fourth, but it was just too easy. And everybody wants to say J.J. McCarthy's not good. Okay, that's your opinion, but he was efficient in this game. 12-16, 156 yards, and 2 touchdowns. No interceptions, and he wasn't sacked at all. And Blake Corum was your leading rusher with 74 yards, and Donovan Edwards was the second leading rusher with 48 yards. You and I were talking on Saturday after the game, and you said you think Michigan should be ranked number one over Georgia. Do you still stand by that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a Michigan fan, so that's kind of easy to say. I think Michigan should stay. I think Michigan's fine where they are. It's not really going to matter right now until we get to the playoff polls.
Right. Right. I can't wait to see them against Penn State. I know they've had their share of struggles, like personally and off the field, but Michigan State is always a game.
Well, they got a rivalry next week too. They got the big brown jug
against Minnesota.
Yep,
that's gonna be tough. But Minnesota, they're a power team. You know, I think Michigan could beat them, but it won't be easy. I don't think this is an opponent that they can overlook.
No, I believe, don't they have them the next week? Isn't the next week? I believe that. Let me double check. Isn't it? Yeah. Oh, Michigan State.
Usually they play.
No, it's Indiana. Yeah. Okay, they can overlook them there. There's the sandwich game.
Okay.
There's the sandwich game because it is Minnesota, right, then Indiana, then Michigan State.
So they play Minnesota this upcoming Saturday, October 7th.
Yep.
Then right after that, Indiana comes to the Big House, like you just said. And then right after that,
trap game.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, then after Michigan State.
And then Purdue, trap game.
Easy. Which isn't easy.
And then Maryland, major trap game.
Yeah.
Because Maryland right now is undefeated too.
Yeah. So, this is, they're going to definitely be interesting to watch. You know, but Penn State and Ohio State are going to give them all they can handle. Look, this is the class of the Big Ten.
Dude, the Big Ten right now is kind of nuts. There's five teams right now that are looking really good.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's eight mm-hmm. teams over 500 right now. The rest are all under 500.
Right.
It's Penn State. Right now, the undefeated are Penn State, Maryland, Michigan, and Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Your 4-1s or 3-1s are Wisconsin, Iowa, and Rutgers.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnesota's 3-2.
Yeah.
Everyone else is 2-3, or actually, no, everyone else is 2-3.
So we knew the teams that were supposed to be good, the Penn States, the
Michigans, the Ohio State.
We knew they're exactly where I think a lot of us expected them to be.
Wisconsin and Iowa, we kind of saw that. Let's face it, Maryland, you didn't see 5-0.
No.
Rutgers, unless you're from Jersey, you didn't see 4-1.
No. You didn't. And you were at that game on Saturday.
And that balanced defense does it again. But now they have to go into, and now they have to walk into Camp Randall and jump around against fucking Wisconsin, who they can beat.
Yeah, yeah. They can. They can because, you know, I was pretty high on Wisconsin coming into the season. Had them winning the Big Ten West, but they've been kind of disappointing.
When the games... Honestly, right now, they can be in the driver's seat. It's weird to say because unless Michigan loses to, like, Ohio State, Rutgers is in the driver's seat for a big bowl game. And I'm
because
not even...
They're in the Big Ten West, correct?
East.
Oh, they are in the East.
Oh, okay. They're in the fucking powerhouse of hell on high water.
Yeah, definitely.
So, this is I'll just show you what they got now. Like I said, they're at Camp Randall.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're home for Sparty.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're at Indiana. Then they're home for Ohio State, which, win those three games, College Game Day will be in Piscataway.
Mm-hmm.
Money on that. Then they're in Kinnick, which is going to be a batshit crazy game. Then they're at Penn State. Then they're home against Maryland. You could be 7-1 going into Ohio State, and you can beat Iowa, and you can beat Ohio State, because Ohio State going into that game, that is 06 Louisville vibes, period.
Yeah, this Ohio State team, don't get me wrong, I love what they did.
Can't handle the run.
Look, I love what they did last weekend in South Bend. But eventually, they're going to have to put the ball in the air. Because what happens when a team just sits on that line of scrimmage and they dare Kyle McCord to beat them, right?
Yeah.
Think about it. The Big Ten's definitely going to be something to watch moving forward. I always call it the month of November in college football. I always call it the statement November. Because that is the time when teams are vying for the playoff and bowl games. They're putting themselves in position for bowl games. Now, another thing to add before we wrap up with college football, and then I'm going to give out a game ball, and then there's something else that Ronnie has.
Oh, yeah.
Notre Dame. Notre Dame and Duke. Whoever thought Duke football, of all things, would be a spotlight game.
Well, Duke has been kind of football since Danny Dimes was there.
Yeah, but, you know, I think after parting ways with David Cutcliffe, they hired Mike Elko. They won 9 games last year, and they're 4-1 right now. So Notre Dame did win that game. They had to grind that game out, and they did exactly what I call for them to do. That's feed Audric Estime the football. He's your best player. Put the ball in the hands of your best player and just move the hell out the way. Okay? Notre Dame's defense did what they had to do. You know, I was really looking forward to seeing what Riley Leonard was going to do. And I feel awful for this kid because he did leave the game on crutches. You saw that ankle injury.
Yep.
I just thought it was extremely classy of Sam Hartman to go over to him at the end of the game and make sure that he was good. Because, look, at the end of the day, man, it's beyond competition, right? Looking at these numbers, so Notre Dame won this game by a score of 21-14. Sam Hartman, 15-30, 222 yards passing, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Audric Estime was pretty much the bell cow, him and Mitchell Evans, the tight end, who was giving me serious Michael Mayer vibes. Just seemed like every time Sam Hartman threw that ball in Mitchell's vicinity, he made a play on a ball. 6 receptions, 134 yards. And he knew that Duke had no answer for them. Great game. I enjoyed this one. Low scoring, physical, hard hitting. Both defenses came to play. Anything you want to add to this, Ronnie?
No, I enjoyed every bit of that game.
Yeah, I was able to preview this one on Saturday. Had so much fun. I always have fun previewing every game. There was one thing. So before we end college football, and then we go to the phone lines and we talk NFL, there was one thing you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, you want to give your game ball first before we go to my trash bag?
I mean, come on now. Caleb Williams, 30 of 40, 402 yards, 6 touchdowns. And pretty much showed why he's still in the driver's seat for the Heisman.
Yeah. So, all right. Like I said, Christian likes to give a game ball to the greatest. I like to give people their trash bags and tell them to get the fuck out because there's nothing in the sport that does this. And you have two. One of ours is the same, but I also have another one. And I posted this on my Twitter on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that me and you both have to talk about is the shit that happened on Friday night with Louisiana Tech's linebacker, Brevin Randall.
Okay.
Who, after bum-rushing a UTEP player, offensive lineman, decided to step on the back. Everyone's like, oh, it's his helmet. No. Watch it again, especially on the Nerdport Network Twitter, where he stepped on the back of his neck.
Oh,
he did not step on his helmet. He stepped on the back of his neck. And the fact that there was no penalties called, no one pulled him off the field, and no one and he was not done. He was not done playing in that game. He kept playing is classless.
But I will say this. The ref did go up to the coach and said he missed it completely. So to take ownership, accountability, and responsibility for that, that's huge.
Well, we do have an update on this.
Let me hear it.
They have suspended him indefinitely.
Yeah, because there's no place for that. Like, you know, I remember when Albert Haynesworth stepped on Andre Girard in 2006.
That was the cleat across the top of the head, right?
Right, right. When the Cowboys were playing the Titans. And then we all remember all of Ndamukong Suh's antics. What he did. There's no need for that. I'm almost at a loss of words for this. You know, look, as a ref, I get refs. They sometimes overlook things. But when there's something as blatantly wrong and foul as this, you throw a flag on that immediately. There's no need for that in our game. I get it's a physical game, but there's no need for the dirty antics.
No, and it wasn't like it was an accident either. Like, if you're stepping over to somebody and you accidentally clip them, that's one thing. When you permanently, like, put the boot to them, yeah, here's your trash bag, get the fuck out.
Yeah, definitely. Glad that he was suspended. So did the NCAA suspend him or did the team suspend
him? Louisiana Tech suspended him indefinitely.
Okay, all right, cool. So he may not come back.
No, and I guarantee you, after seeing that, if he tries to transfer out, no school will take him.
No, I could see that for sure. That's all we have for college football today. We're going to go to the phone
lines. Didn't you have another trash bag?
Did I?
But you said you had two to talk about, because I have another one, actually two more, but one's a team trash bag.
I lost my whole train of thought about about giving trash bags.
All right, well, let me give mine then. The University of Florida's defense. We made fun of Notre Dame. We made fun of Notre Dame last week for having 10 men on the Notre Dame's defense for having 10 men on the field and not being able to stop someone.
They had 13.
They had 13 and couldn't stop Ray Davis.
Still couldn't stop anybody. That's a doggone shame.
Yep.
Come on, man.
Yep. Here's your trash bag. Get the fuck out.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I have to give a trash bag to the fans of Ole Miss.
Oh, Lord.
Who decided during the game because of a phantom penalty, or I don't know if it was a phantom penalty or a penalty, decided to throw trash and beer cans on the field.
Look, if you're not happy with a call or something, just keep your emotions and your anger to yourself, because you throw something on that field and something injures a player, a coach, or an official, that's a lawsuit.
The problem is this has all started really happening. And I've been on this since it started.
Mm-hmm.
Since college football started selling alcohol in stadiums.
Uh-oh.
This has been going on from the first day that it happened, when the Miami versus Florida game hit and there was a fight on the field with the band.
Yeah.
With a student, to this. There has been issues with college students drinking at games, and everyone's like, oh, well, they're going to do it in the parking lot anyway. Yeah, you want to know the problem, the best part about these fans drinking outside in the parking lot? Is mm-hmm. when they come in, they have 3 to 4 hours to sober the fuck up.
Right.
It doesn't hurt the fact that they're charging $20 a fucking 40 or a tall boy.
Oh, boy.
And I'm seeing people with double fisting these things. I'm like, You're spending $40 on $30 on fucking beer. Like, why?
Yeah.
This is something the NCAA really needs. Oh, well, they stopped selling at halftime. They need to stop selling, period, because you know that it's happening already in the parking lot.
Exactly.
And you're not making money off of it on sponsorships like the NFL is.
Exactly. Nah, you're absolutely right. And with that being said, I'm glad I let you have that rant. We're going to go through the phone lines. We're going to play some music. This is Monday Evening Quarterback on Spotify. God, stumbling. I'll say that. Start that over. This is Monday Evening Quarterback on Spotify, YouTube, Twitch, Blog Talk Radio, and the Nerdport Network. Please like, share, and subscribe. I meant to say that when I open up the show. Once again, this is MEQ, hashtag Daily Blitz Radio. Let's hear what the beautiful people had to say on the phone lines. It's another day, which means one thing. More phone calls on Monday Evening Quarterback. This gentleman I have on was actually on a couple months ago, and I'm glad to have him back. Mike, you're back on Monday Evening Quarterback. What's on your mind football-wise?
Well, I just want to talk some college football with you. Okay, so as far as the top five goes, who do you think had the most impressive win, Florida State or Texas? Do you think Florida State beating LSU on a neutral field was more impressive? Or do you think Alabama losing at home to Texas was more impressive win for Texas?
For me, it's definitely Texas, because we should really be talking about Texas beating Alabama 2 years in a row. We can play hypotheticals, and we can talk about, oh, if Quinn Ewers didn't go down, it'd be a victory. But you saw the difference. Quinn Ewers for four quarters, and Texas beat Alabama at their own game. They were physical. They were downhill. They were just more aggressive. And I don't trust that Alabama secondary. And honestly, Jalen Milroe doesn't do it for me. He doesn't move the needle like previous Alabama quarterbacks. When you think of Alabama football, you think of a strong running game, a physical offensive line, a punishing defense, and they always have that one standout guy in the secondary. And as of late, they've had star power wide receiving cores, and they don't have much of that now. So I would definitely say it's Texas going in to Tuscaloosa. I think it's safe to say they're back.
Well, so, you know, since we're putting asterisks on everything, so you're saying that there was an asterisk on that win last year a little bit, you know?
I'm not that type of guy. Look, a win is a win. I don't care if,
I'm
you
glad.
Know, yeah, I know what you mean, though.
You know, I'm a Lions fan. That's all I've heard about. A win is a win is a win. The only reason why I asked you that question, though, is because of the way that both these teams won was just Florida State completely just opened up against LSU, and Bama has a lot of questions and stuff. So I guess college football landscape is just it's crazy this year, because Georgia, we don't know, because they haven't played any. It's like Michigan. Michigan hasn't really played anyone either, you know? So we don't know what to expect from these teams. We know Michigan's going to be good. We know Georgia. We don't know if Georgia's going to be that good. They're starting a kid that we don't know, and they lost a lot. So it's the top college football is really exciting this year.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, it's a different landscape. Georgia, you know, Georgia's done what Georgia's done. But other than that, yeah, man, it's definitely been entertaining after 2 weeks. And I can't wait to see what it's like down the stretch, you know, going into late October, going into early November when those playoff rankings come out and, you know, teams fighting for playoff positioning. I mean, this is what the sport is all about, Mike.
It is. And I think, you know, as the weeks go by, because Ohio State, Notre Dame's going to, you know, essentially with just a 4-team playoff this year, whoever loses this game, I don't think makes the playoff, you know, so Ohio State would have a better chance than Notre Dame, but it might be an elimination game. And Ohio State hasn't looked like some of these teams, even Michigan's run game has not looked that good, but we can't overreact. They're playing bad teams, but yeah. Maybe they're not showing as much. I don't know. But
right.
I haven't been this excited for college football in a long time.
Yeah, I hear it. I hear it in your voice, man. I agree with you about Ohio State and Notre Dame. I think, you know, this time it's in South Bend. You remember when they played last year? It was week one, and it was in the Shoe. And I got to give Notre Dame a little bit of credit because they kept a high-octane Ohio State offense to 21 points. So with that being said, you know, I think it's just going to be more of an interesting matchup this time. However, Notre Dame goes into that game with advantage at quarterback over Ohio State for sure.
Yeah, and just to I just have a few more things to add. Sam Hartman, I think he is a Heisman Trophy candidate if they win that game.
Yeah, that's a possibility. You know, I always say you need that Heisman-esque moment, and that could be it for him. So I can't necessarily say you're wrong on that.
And as far as Colorado goes, I know a lot of people call me a hater, but like, I still think Colorado goes 8-4, 7-5, which is still impressive. From that team was nothing. 8-4 is impressive. 7-5 is impressive. I still think they're going to lose to all the Pac-12 teams that are like. I still think Oregon, Washington, and like USC are better than them, and mm-hmm. They'll probably lose a game that they should have won. But it's still impressive because I think this team will be really. Are buying for championships if Deion stays there, but I don't think it'll be this year. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair, but, you know, there's two major issues with Colorado. One, they can't run the football. Like, you know, you can't depend on Shador to throw the ball over 500 yards every game and you expect to win. And two, they can't stop the run. And those are, you know, those are two key things that Pac-12 opponents are going to be looking at once conference play starts. So, I'll say this, anything over 1-11 is a vast improvement for this program.
Oh, yeah.
Now, Mike, you got anything else for me, buddy?
Well, the very last thing I want to say is who is your four playoff teams? Do you go that far in advance? Or?
I did this year. I have Georgia, Michigan, Florida State, and I did have Alabama, but I think that's on life support right now. As we speak, I think, you know, that prediction is skating on thin ice. That fourth spot can go to, I feel, two teams. It can go to Texas. It could go, or maybe even three. It could go to Texas. It could go to USC, or it could go to Notre Dame.
Or, yeah, I agree. Well, that's all.
Well, okay, Mike, now, before you go, the last time you were here, I asked you what your favorite thing was about the Daily Blitz, right? And you gave me a detailed answer, so now I have another question for you. If you had to refer the Daily Blitz to somebody, what would you say in your recommendation?
What would I say in my recommendation?
Yeah.
Well, I would say you definitely, I like your opinions. They're not biased. For even teams that I know that you would say that you would like, you're not biased towards them, which I like about you. You treat them just like everyone else, so I like your non-biased opinion, so it makes it more credible to me. So it's a credible opinion.
Mike,
it's a credible source.
Mike, I appreciate you so much for coming back on MEQ. And like I say, buddy, the doors of MEQ are always open. You let me know when you want to come back on, all right?
All right, thank you. You have a good night.
My man, you too. Man, it's a brand new week, which means one thing. Brand new people and brand new phone calls, on Monday Evening Quarterback, and I have somebody that's been itching to get on MEQ for the longest. I actually think he's been on before, and this is the second time coming to MEQ, because what do I always say? The doors of Monday Evening Quarterback are always open. Skip, you're back on MEQ talking football with the analysts. What's on your mind football-wise?
Can my guy Jordan Love get his due finally?
Look.
Everybody questions him.
Look.
You know, he showed up yesterday. Biggest rivalry in football. 3 TDs, 0 picks, 245. Six highest QBR rating yesterday. Like, I think it's time my man get his credit. Like, we're not, yes, the Packers have an outstanding defense, but Jordan Love rang the bell. We're going to be okay and great back.
look, okay. I like everything you said, and I was impressed with what the young man did. I just sounded old calling him young man. But look, I'll say this. This Packers team, this has almost a 2008 feel all over again. Because you remember offseason of 2008, Brett Favre retires, then he gets traded to the Jets. 15 years later, Aaron Rodgers gets traded to the Jets. He actually makes his debut tonight against the Buffalo Bills. And now it's a Jordan Love show. I will tell you, it was a little bit weird watching a little bit of that game yesterday. Not seeing Aaron, not seeing Brett, but it just seemed like it was the same result. A Packers win over the Chicago Bears once again. But I want to say this, though, and you being a Packer fan, correct me if I'm wrong here, okay? After the game, I saw quite a few Packers players really rallying around Jordan Love, saying, oh, yeah, he's the real deal. This is our leader. Didn't necessarily see that with Aaron Rodgers the last 5 or 10 years or so. How do you feel about that?
It's no disrespect to Aaron. Obviously, Aaron's his own legend, just like Brett is his own legend.
Right.
It comes a time where you can no longer be bigger than the organization. And it just ran that course. And I wish Aaron well, like we wish Brett well. But this is Jordan Love era. And the thing that was most important and most people won't realize for another 3 weeks, Jordan Love didn't even have his number one target yesterday. His number one target was over there in street clothes.
And that's Christian Watson.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Pro Bowler himself.
Yup. So, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, too. Skip, what else is on your mind football-wise?
I'm interested in tonight. The Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers matchup, I feel like it's a good test for both teams. And I'm interested to watch the Jets. You know, they've been the talk of the summer football team. And, mm-hmm. You know, so I want to see how they really pan out. I just know they won't be as successful as we will be in Green Bay.
Well, I'll say this. This is a tone setter in the AFC. This is a huge game this early on in the AFC. And the Bills, they've been the best team in the AFC East the last 3 years. The Jets, they had everything going for them except inconsistency at the most important position, which was quarterback.
But, and I'm interested to see the step from Josh Allen. You know, I feel like he needs, after last year, how he finished the season and how he acted and performed in the championship game, I just feel like he has to prove something. He has a chip on his shoulder. He looks like a different guy, and I'm interested to see, can he answer the bell? Because he has a hell of a supporting cast around him, and, you know, him stepping into that mold and being that quarterback that everybody puts him at, he has to take that step. Because we're watching Patrick Mahomes run off right now with the help of the best quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And Josh was playing at an MVP level until he got hurt last year. Then Von Miller went down, and then everything that happened with DeMar Hamlin toward the end of the year. I honestly think, you know, the last thing that was on the minds of Buffalo Bills players was football, because you almost see a teammate lose his life on the field. But thank God he's still with us to this very day, and, you know, he overcame that. So he's nothing but motivation and inspiration to so many people, myself included. But this is going to be a great game tonight. Who do you have actually winning this game, Skip?
24-17, Buffalo.
Okay. Now, Skip, I end every phone call by asking people this one question. I don't know if I asked you this the last time you were here, but I'm going to do it again. I always ask people what their favorite thing is about the Daily Blitz. So now I present that question to you. What's your favorite thing about the Daily Blitz?
You know, I've been a fan since day one, so, you know, I can talk that talk. Man, you've been since day one. I got to watch you put in the work. I got you go from nothing to something. You know, you grow your fan base. I was here before you even had merch. You know, a lot of people don't have merch at the beginning. You know, and I appreciate that because I kind of feel like quarterbacks don't get the attention they need right now, and I feel like you're the only person giving it, bro, and I appreciate it.
Nah, I appreciate you for that testimony and those kind words and you coming on a Monday Evening Quarterback to talk football with me. So the next time you want to come back, you always know the doors of MEQ are always open. Enjoy the games tonight, and I wish your Green Bay Packers the best of luck the rest of the season, all right?
For sure, bro.
My man. Make the show better. You guys just don't want to hear me blabbing and talking all the time. Man, I love recording these phone calls. You're probably listening and you're probably wondering, oh, could I do that? Yeah, that could be you. If you want, and let me know, email me, reach out to me on Twitter, get in contact with me. Man, the more phone calls we have on MEQ, the better. We're about to talk the NFL, but there's one thing I have to discuss. So my mom sent me an article the other day about here, let me get it up just to make sure, you know, because I don't want to miss anything. I don't want to get anything wrong as I'm talking about it. But, you know, I was sent an article about how old was he? About a 13-year-old kid named Braylon, right? Braylon Hodgson was his name. And loved sports, you know, just loved being around his friends. But unfortunately, he was sick. He suffered from something called DIKG, I believe, is what it's called. Hey, I'm looking everything up because I don't want to get anything wrong with this. I thought this would be something to bring up, Ronnie, because he was an avid Jets fan, like you are. He was... Oh, man. Just talking about this, you know, it's kind of tough. He was at a couple of Jet camps. You know, the article, which I'll post on social media, even took a picture with Aaron Rodgers and some of his friends, which I thought was pretty cool. He has DIPG. Now, DIPG is, I'm going to read exactly what it is because I did my research on it before I came on. It's diffuse intrinsic pontine glioma. And this is a fatal tumor that arises in the brain cell, most commonly in the pons of the brain. And it affected literally everything because, you know, they say the brain next to your heart is your most important organ, right? He was actually at the game on September 11th, the game that you and I called, Ronnie.
Yep.
And he walked off the field. Aaron Rodgers signed a jersey for him, and he wore it that day. Well, I don't know if he was at the game, per se, but he wore it that day. The opener against Buffalo, and unfortunately, we know what else happened that game. Aaron Rodgers ended up tearing his Achilles, and he's been lost for the year. He was a multi-sport athlete. Lacrosse was his favorite sport. And, you know, it's just heartbreaking. He unfortunately passed away on September 12th. So, thankfully, he was able to see a Jets win. And there's a comment that Braylon's dad made about this game. He said, look, for everything that the Jets did for my son, he doesn't care all that much about the score or what they do. He said, they already won in my eyes. The other reason why I'm bringing this up is because my godmother personally knew Braylon. So, you know, I think on behalf of both of us, we offer our sincere condolences to Braylon and you being a Jet fan and just seeing what the Jets did for him.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of this?
I mean, it's a class act. It's more meaningful than the game. It has nothing to do with the game. It's the meaning of life. It's just...
Absolutely.
A game's a game.
Absolutely. But, yeah, you know, I just had to make sure I did acknowledge that before we discussed anything else football. We wrapped up the show because I didn't want to forget that. But I'm actually going to dedicate this show to Braylon, this episode to Braylon and his family. May he rest in peace. There's no more pain. You know, my thoughts are with his parents, his family, those who knew him. No kid should have to suffer. Nobody in general should have to suffer or live through pain. And I've been saying that to myself a lot the last couple of years, because as many of you know, I lost my grandfather in 2020, you know, seeing him in that state before he passed, that was tough. Then a year later, I lose my grandmother, and seeing her in that state was tough. You never want to see any of your loved ones suffer. And I think you can agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I just had to make sure. I definitely acknowledge that. But I don't even know how to say switching gears, because I don't even feel right saying that. But I know we already talked college. Let's try to finish the show on a positive. We already talked college. Now it's time to talk the NFL. Week 4 is almost in the books. The game of the week on paper in the NFL was what? The Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills. Now, Miami, they've been the talk of the NFL the first 3 weeks. A blazing offense, speed on offense. Tyreek Hill's playing at a historic level. Tua was healthy. I was able to preview this game on Friday, right? And I called it to be continued, but I spelled it with Tua's name. I don't know if you caught that, Ronnie.
Yeah, I caught it. Clever.
I try. Thank you. I kept telling people coming into this game that if there's a team that can hang with Miami, it's the Buffalo Bills. Like, did you see what Buffalo did last Sunday against the Commanders?
Yep.
So I was kind of curious to see how they were going to come out today. Buffalo dominated this game. I mean, absolutely dominated this game. They won this game by a score of 48-20. For a minute, when I saw Buffalo scoring touchdowns, I'm saying to myself, okay, Miami's going to respond back. And they did for a little bit, but Buffalo just showed that they were the better team. Tua had himself a nice game. He was 25 of 35, 282 yards, one touchdown, one interception, but he was sacked 4 times. Devin Achane, hopefully I'm saying that right, 8 carries, 101, and 2 touchdowns. Here's the biggest stat, because Ronnie, what did I say was my key to the game when it came to Tyreek Hill, when we talked about this on the Nerd Zone last week?
Keeping him tame.
Not only keeping him tamed, it was the simple fact of having that, playing that single high look, right, which is man-to-man underneath, and having a safety over the top to shadow, right? And anytime he, I'm making him earn everything underneath because he likes to go down the field and he can even take the shortest routes and turn those into big gains. Like, he's the most explosive receiver in the NFL right now.
Right.
You know, if people were to say he's the most impactful offensive player that isn't a quarterback, I wouldn't go against that. Tyreek Hill was held to under 100 yards, 58 yards receiving. And Jalen Waddle was held in check too.
That's right? A big thing. Both of them are.
Because look, as a defense, when you have one guy that you know can just change the dynamic of another game, and then you have another one who can do that too, that says something, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's look at the Buffalo side. Josh Allen, my God. 21 of 25, 320 yards, 4 touchdown passes. Actually, he accounted for 5 touchdowns. 4 touchdown passes, and he ran for 1. No interceptions and 2 sacks, right? Latavius Murray was your leading rusher, so Buffalo wasn't really able to pound the rock like they have been the last couple of games. Latavius Murray rushed for 32 yards. James Cook and Damian Harris both rushed for 29 yards. But Josh Allen wasn't your leading rusher again. 4 carries, 17 yards. He ran when he had to. Stephon Diggs, 6 receptions, 120 yards, and 3 touchdowns. And Gabe Davis caught the other one for Josh Allen.
Right.
Ronnie, I think Buffalo's turned the page ever since that Jets game because everybody was ready to throw the towel in on them after they lost that heartbreaker to the Jets, right?
I don't know. There's still too many questions for me.
Don't get me wrong.
Are they a playoff team? Yes. I will say that now because, I mean, obviously with the Jets pretty much being SOL.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to look at it that way, that the Bills are probably going to get, if not the division, I still think Miami right now is the team to take that division.
I don't know about that, because watching that game yesterday, what did Miami do in week 3? How many points?
7.
They gave up 48 defensively.
Yeah.
And that's a knock on teams with high-octane offensives. They can outscore you, but the thing about that is Miami's too finesse. And what did Buffalo do? I said in my preview, and I said before I even released the preview with you, that for Buffalo to win this game, they have to establish themselves at the line of scrimmage and be physical. And look at what they did. Miami got punched in the mouth. And let's be real here. Miami hasn't really seen that. Look, you know, the Chargers couldn't stop cyberbullying. Let's just get that out the way. New England gave them fits, but they were able to kind of get through that. And then what they did to Denver last week was just inhumane. They were punched in the mouth. And, yeah, I know it's one game, but it's kind of a concern about their defense because, say, if their offense isn't able to get it going like they weren't today, then what? You see what I'm saying? I think this game showed me that Buffalo was still the class of this division.
Well, here's the thing. The one thing about this that is very understanding is the fact that this also happened in Orchard Park.
Yeah, definitely. But let's not act like Josh Allen hasn't ascended when he's played the Miami Dolphins. I think now he's 10-1 all time, with his first loss coming against them last year.
I mean, let's see what Miami does at home next week against the Jets.
Yeah, but
then they got Carolina. Then they're at Philly.
They play the Giants next week, actually.
Oh, the Giants. Sorry.
Yeah, they play the Giants next week.
Hey, score. If you're gonna put NY, put who the fuck they're playing.
Exactly, but yeah.
Well, they got them Thanksgiving week.
I've seen people say that Buffalo's kind of look like the class of the AFC. I don't know if I'm ready to go that far yet, but they've bounced back.
Here's the thing. The Bills are a great regular season team.
Yeah, let's see if they can – the way they've played early on, let's see if that can transfer over into the postseason. Because, look, don't get me wrong. The talent's been there, right? When Josh Allen is in control like he's been these last couple of games, they're going to be a tough out. I think last week against Washington was the best I've seen the Bills play on the defensive side. Because look how they were just swarming to the ball. 9 sacks, 4 interceptions. And today, they recorded 4 more sacks on a quarterback that's been playing pretty doggone good. Yeah, that's all I really have to say about that. What else caught your eye in week 4, Ronnie?
Honestly, nothing really. I mean, the fact that we had a Toy Story game over in London.
Oh, yeah, we did. Nice bounce back win by Jacksonville, and they're back over.
They're staying there.
They're staying there because they play Buffalo next week in London. Desmond Ridder's not ready yet.
No.
Add a couple pieces, you know, maybe get a quarterback that's ready to help you elevate your team, and I think they'll be okay. But he's shown that he can't beat you.
Kenny Pickett out with a knee injury.
I'm actually glad you brought him up because I honestly think he's getting a little too much flack. Everybody wants to say he's a bust and whatnot, but I'm over here and I'm saying, look, I believe in Kenny Pickett. I really do. It's his coordinator I don't like because I think they're trying to get Kenny to do a little too much.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? Like, Matt Canada isn't catering to his quarterback skill set. And then I want to talk about another young quarterback after this.
I mean, this has been this week was a lot of floundering, hurt young quarterbacks.
Yeah, and my thing with the Steelers. When you think of Pittsburgh Steelers football, what are the two things that come to mind?
Defense and running.
Bingo. And they stop the run. They need to build this offense around Najee Harris. Remember what the Steelers did for young Ben Roethlisberger when he came into the league?
Yeah, got a freaking heavily, guy like Polamalu.
Right, and they lean heavily on the running game. Like, yeah, Jerome Bettis was at the tail end of his career, but he was still able to get you some yards here and there. And they just, you know, they surrounded him with running backs, and they only asked him to make a pass when it mattered.
Yeah, like honestly, let's honest to God, what the Jets need to do, like
with their
offense, it's the exact same thing.
Yeah, but nah, the Steelers need to go back to the basics. They got to go back to their blueprint: running the football, playing good defense. I mean, they got gashed yesterday. In Houston. I mean, Houston punched them in the mouth, and it wasn't even close. I don't even think the Steelers scored a touchdown in that game.
Maybe you could tell me this. Does Chicago have a first pick next year?
Yeah, because they have Carolina's pick. Because you remember, they got that when they acquired DJ Moore.
Okay, good. So they're going to most likely be the first pick of the draft and get Caleb.
So... okay. I want to talk about that.
Because they are going to get rid of Fields.
I know I've been one to kind of joke around and troll the Chicago Bears, but I want to say this about Justin Fields. Yes, I did make a post saying Mrs. Fields is greater than Justin Fields. I did say that.
I mean, shit, let's turn over.
I'll deal with you after the show.
I know what I said.
But yeah, I know you did. And I'm going to say what I have to say. Justin Fields isn't the reason why the Bears lost that game yesterday. The defense didn't man up. And when you have a big lead, what's the one thing football fans and analysts always call for coaches to do?
Prevent.
Run the football. Milk the clock. Time of possession. Don't let that other team see the ball. again, and they got away from that. Yes, Justin did lose a fumble. Yes, he did throw an interception, but here's my thing. Justin Fields balled out in that game yesterday. Now, the Bears did blow a 28-7 lead. I will say that much. But Justin Fields, listen, 28-35, 335 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception. Yes, he was sacked 4 times, but that's not a bad stat line. He did what he had to do.
God, that's going to be terrifying if that's legit. So, they've kind of projected where if things ended today, what the draft would be. So, right now, the Bears would have 1 and 2.
Wow.
Yeah, the Bears look like they would be getting Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr.
And Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah.
Wow. Khalil Herbert, he ran for 103 yards. And DJ Moore, they finally used them.
Yeah, I know, right?
Look, this loss is on two people. Matt Eberflus and Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator of the Chicago Bears. I also want to say this. Denver, I really wanted to see how they responded in this one. And I mean, they came back. They won their first game of the year. Russell Wilson was pretty good. 21-28, 223 yards passing, and 3 touchdowns. Right?
Yeah.
That's a tough way to lose a game, but don't slander Justin Fields. That's all on coaching. I remember I was saying to someone the other day, and I said this in a preview too, if the Bears are going to go after a new coach and they're going to decide to part ways with Matt Eberflus, you know who I think they need to go after?
Who?
Ron Rivera.
Yeah, I could see that.
And the reason why I say that is because Ron's going to hold you accountable. And I see how hard the Commanders play under Rivera. I just don't think the Bears want to play for Matt Eberflus, number one. And number two, Matt doesn't hold his men accountable. I don't think a Bears coach has held their players accountable since Lovey. Mark Trestman certainly didn't do it.
Yeah.
John Fox didn't do it. Matt Nagy was a nightmare. I'm just saying. Something's got to give in Chicago. Because, look, living out there, that's one of the most passionate fan bases I think I've ever been around. And I've been around some fan bases who are completely ride or die, right?
Right.
They stick with the Bears. Win, lose, or draw in the conditions, they stick with them. Anything else you want to add to this? You add on to this, Ronnie.
Yeah. I mean, really, in this end, like I've said from the start, Justin Fields was a poor man's, guy that was on the Bills. He was at the Bears before that. They got rid of one person to go get Justin Fields. Exact same player. And then completely tried to make him the same way. No point for that. Like, it was absolutely no reason for that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think. Who was the guy that they got Fields instead of? They traded up for Fields. Who was the original quarterback? It was, who was the Bears quarterback before Fields?
Mitchell Trubisky.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Trubisky, like I said, Trubisky is the exact same style of player as Fields, and they completely decided to shit on that. And then try to make Fields their quarterback when exactly how Trubisky played. And then what? You get what you reap what you sow. Because I remember I did it on Wednesday's show. Everyone kept saying to me, You're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. He's a better player than Trubisky. Really, I beg to differ.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that's a good debate. That really is.
They're the same player.
Listen. Now, I think Fields throws it a little bit better.
But here's the thing. Both players play with the drop back and take off if needed. But they've stopped. They did it with Trubisky, and they got rid of Trubisky because he wasn't running the ball. Well, then, we're going to get Fields, who does the exact same thing as Mitch, and have him run the same style. Well, if you're going to run the exact same style as Trubisky, you're going to fail like Trubisky did because he's not going to conform to that offense.
Just remember, the Bears passed up not only on Patrick Mahomes, they passed up on Deshaun Watson, too. Just imagine if they had one of those two guys, where they would be right now.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, depends on if it really depends on if it's the same shit. Like, it really depends on if it's the same coaching staff.
Yeah, that's very true. Here's one thing I wanted to elaborate on something else that caught my eye in week 4. It's time to panic in Cincinnati. Something ain't right. Joe Burrow got all that money. Right, and rightfully so, he should have, right? But there's no type of camaraderie with their offense. Like, it just seems like Burrow's not on the same page with Higgins, with Boyd, nor Jamar Chase, number one. They're not establishing Joe Mixon enough, that's number two. And defensively, they lost Jesse Bates and they lost Von Bell. And I also think Joe Burrow's a little bit more hurt than he's letting on because the Bengals just haven't looked as explosive as what we're used to seeing. Remember, they got punched in the mouth by Cleveland in week 1, right? Held to 3 points. They put up 24 on Baltimore, but they lose that game. Even in the win last Monday night against the Rams, the offense just didn't look electric. They didn't look explosive. And then yesterday in Tennessee, the Titans beat them down. And I think the Titans took it personally because, remember, Cincinnati beat them in the playoffs a couple years ago. And they beat them last year in the regular season. Something's not right. And yeah, it's making me wonder what's really going on with Joe Burrow. It just seems like he's not there mentally. And what's crazy is, one, Joe Burrow was my preseason pick to win MVP, and the Bengals were my pick to come out the AFC and get to the Super Bowl. And right now, both those predictions are making me look really damn bad. I think it's time to be concerned right now in Cincy, because there's Something's just not, the math ain't mathing.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but the Bengals, they're getting punched in the mouth. I mean, they beat them down badly because I'll give Joe Burrow props. I get, you never want to sit out and you never want to miss games, but Jamar Chase said something during the preseason after Joe got hurt, that's kind of stuck with me, and it kind of makes me wonder, oh, okay, maybe he's on to something. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Jamar Chase said, look, sit out the first 4 games if you have to. Come back when you're healthy. I don't think he was wrong on that.
No, it especially showed today after them freaking getting destroyed by
Yeah, they got destroyed by Tennessee yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got destroyed. It just seems like that whole injury in training camp, it kind of deflated the Bengals. And they've never really been able to get back together. But, like I said, they really miss Jesse Bates. Like, you could make a case that he was their most important defensive player. And they don't have that tape in the back end of the secondary. And I mean, give the Titans a lot of credit. They played Titans football. They ran the ball. They ran it down Cincinnati's throat until they could stop it, which they couldn't. And I also see that trio of receivers that I mentioned with Chase and Higgins and Boyd. Passes that they would normally catch, they're dropping. The ball is just kind of ricocheting off their hands. You see what I mean?
Right.
But like I said, I think Joe is a lot more hurt than he's allowing. Right now, the Baltimore Ravens, even with their issues and their injuries, they're the class of the AFC North right now. Unless Cincinnati can regroup and refocus, but it's not looking good right now in Cincinnati.
No, it's
he's
not.
Tough, but he's more hurt than I think he's showing.
I agree.
And it's like what my co-analyst, Mr. Cole Johnson, said yesterday, or as I call him, Coach. The Titans just didn't beat the Bengals. They beat down the Bengals. You know you're not good when you've been held to a field goal in two of your first four games.
Right.
Something's got to give. Like, something ain't right. Yeah, anything else you want to add, Ronnie, before we wrap this thing up?
No, I'm good.
So let's, okay. No one really left me any questions, which is okay. But okay, if you want to, just follow us on Twitter, which I'll promote.
Oh, the one thing I want to ask you is, quick analyze, what do you got for tonight?
Monday Night Football, Seahawks, Giants.
No Andrew Thomas. As of right now, game time decision is...
Saquon's doubtful.
Game time.
No, I read he was doubtful.
I heard day to day, so that was...
They'll probably test him out.
That was Saturday?
Yeah, they'll probably... And then yesterday, during the games, I saw he was doubtful.
Okay.
But you never know. They'll probably test him out prior to kickoff, but I trust Seattle's offense more than I trust the Giants at this point. And one thing I remember saying at the beginning of the year about the Giants, I think I said this to you too, the Giants, they snuck up on teams last year. They got to show that they can establish themselves and start early, because you're not going to always be able to come back like you did in Arizona, right? Daniel's the one thing that's holding them back is Daniel Jones. He's not a guy that's gonna move you to the mountaintop as a quarterback. Like, the Giants need another quarterback. Plain and simple, they need another quarterback, and they need more weapons on the perimeter. The Giants defense, I think they're gonna throw a lot of different looks at Geno, but I don't know if they have an answer for Metcalf and Lockett and Noah Fant and Kenneth Walker. I just think that's too much for the Giants to overcome. I think Seattle wins this game, and I think they win it by at least two touchdowns. What about you? What are you thinking about this one?
I think as much as I want Seattle to lose, I think Seattle wins by seven.
I can see it, but the Giants just don't have that firepower offensively that to keep up with teams. You know, like, you can dink it and dump it only so long, and, you know, you can run the ball so long, but eventually you're going to have to make some passes down the field. And Daniel Jones has shown that he can't do that consistently, at least. Yeah, I like Seattle. I think Seattle wins this game. I say 28-14. You want to add a score prediction?
What is it? 21-28.
So you're going 28-21 Seahawks.
Yeah, Seattle.
Okay. Well, with that being said, let's wrap this show up, man. It was another fun one, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It always is, man. I love doing this with you. This is the best decision I think I ever could have made. I like being heard, not seen. I felt kind of awkward when I was recording it on. Just a little. Nah, man, because I'll go and play phone calls, and I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, oh, God, everybody's watching this.
but, yeah, I mean, once we found out what we can do, it's not that hard.
Hey, look, man, technology is one hell of a thing. As I said, you know, I'm dedicating this show to the young man I talked about before we discussed everything that caught our eye in the NFL, Breland Hodgson. This episode is dedicated to him and it's for his family as well. Again, we offer our condolences and our thoughts and, you know, just kudos to the Jets. Because at the end of the day, you made a kid's dreams come true. And for that, you know, you get my round of applause. I tip my cap to you about that because it's bigger than a game. It's more than a game at the end of the day. And that's the one thing we all have to realize. And again, I'd be crazy if I didn't mention this. So rest in peace to Breland. 13 is too young. And, you know, one thing I also want to say about that, just kind of elaborate, you know, tell someone you love them today. Give somebody the flowers today or this week. Because you just never know. Like, you just never know. No parent should have to bury a child, no matter how old they are. But with that being said, you know, not to rudely just segue out of that. This is the end of the show. Man, as always, keep up with us on social media. First, log on to the website, which is thedailyblitz.blog, and enter your email address and become a subscriber today. Tomorrow, I'll announce what it is I'm previewing on the site. Schedule kind of made itself a little bit. It seems like it's been doing that a lot this year so far, Ronnie.
Yeah.
But looking forward to this up and coming week of games that will be previewed on the site. Once again, that's thedailyblitz.blog. Enter your email address, as I said. Follow us on Twitter or X or whatever you're calling it this day.
X gonna give it to you, I don't know.
Yeah, X gonna give it to you, I don't know. At @DailyBlitz_61. Follow us on Instagram @TheDailyBlitz61. Looking to get back on Facebook very soon, so bear with me because Facebook and your boy have been like water and oil. We just haven't gone together. As always, I always end the show with shout outs. Huge shout out to my family, my incredible mother, my beautiful sister Taylor, and my dad. Man, I love you three so very much. I am nothing without you. I'm doing this for all of us. I promise you, this is just the tip of the iceberg. I'm nowhere near close to where I need to be. My mom has supported me through it all, and she's kind of been helping me this year, making sure, you know, game previews are getting posted. I mean, she's a mom. This is what they do. She even got me a calendar book, Ronnie, so I could write down what I'm previewing, because you can't always remember everything.
No, you know, no, you can't.
And it helps me greatly, and it makes me feel even younger. Yeah, my sister Taylor, love her so much, and I'm always so proud of you. Man, you caught up to my 28-year-old self. Nah, she's turning a big 2-5 this year in a couple of months. My son, or better known as my dog, Steve's, who you heard bark a couple of times during this episode. I think that was him just kind of giving him his input. Remember, dogs are part of the family, too. My other siblings, Sean, Janice, Tanisha, thank you guys for all you doing. I love y'all so very much. Some of my closest friends, Robert Butler, Jason Tyree, Candace Carter, Kimmel Fryer, my other guy, Josh, his wife, Diana, and their three beautiful daughters, Tiffany, Natalie, and Madison. I hope you guys are doing well. Once again, that's from Mr. Christian, as they call me themselves. Kevin Cooper, and if you are a lover and a fan of all things baseball, right, check out thecatch.blog. It's a phenomenal blog. Kevin breaks it down better than some of these professionals do on ESPN. So a huge shout out to him and a huge shout out to his wife and their beautiful daughter, Lynn. Some of my other friends, Corey Harris, huge shout out to Corey. He's been supporting me from the get-go. And you hear Siebes again in the background. I already gave you love, man. I'm going to start that over because I just got thrown off. A huge shout out to some of my other friends. Huge shout out to Corey Harris, just celebrated a birthday a couple weeks ago. And then happy birthday again, man. Thanks for everything you've done for me. My other friend, Sean Elliott, man, these two have really pushed me to get to higher levels and get to where I want to be, man. They've been nothing but supportive of me these last couple years and everything I've wanted to do. Some of my other friends, Rob Carter, Mike Griffin, Alex Bennett, huge shout out to you three, my guy Velo, my co-analyst who I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, Cole Johnson, better known as Coach, and our moderator D. He keeps us sharp. How can you keep up with me on the airwaves? Absolutely. This is what I'm here for, and this is why I do this. Every Monday, Monday Evening Quarterback, make sure you like, you share, and you subscribe to the podcast. The episodes will be up every Monday evening. And right now, well, in a few minutes, I'm actually about to jump on the Prime. You can catch me on the Prime every Monday and every Tuesday evening with David On Point, TJ Hopkins, Israel Rivera. Wednesdays, you can catch me back with this knucklehead, better known as my co-host, Ronnie, on the Nerd Zone. God, I'm stumped. It's Monday.
Even though it's the Nerd Zone, we've changed it a couple times. It's mostly we've been calling it the Betting Window.
Yeah, but I'm back on the Nerd Zone, or the Betting Window, as you want to call it, with Ronnie, John Danzo, Ryan Shaw. Huge shout out to those guys as well. Every Friday, you can catch me on College Football Showdown, back on Prime Sports World with my main man, Israel Rivera, and Saturday on Instagram, What's On Tap. Sunday on Instagram, What's On Tap. And then you can also catch me on the Sports Cubicle on WCPT 820 AM in Chicago, Illinois. That is with Dan Marver, Michelangelo Mercado, Devin Tingle, and Paul Shavari. Man, I love every show I contribute for, and I love every show I've contributed for. Thank you guys for having me on your platforms to talk the sport that I've loved pretty much since I was 6 years old. We're about to get out of here again. Monday Night Football, Seattle Seahawks, New York Giants, and I hear that music. I'm already nodding. We're going to ride out to P. Diddy and a Bad Boy Family, because it's Bad Boys for Life. We'll see you next Monday, God willing, back here on MEQ. Have a great remainder of the week, and I hope you guys enjoyed this episode just as much as we have fun recording this episode. This is Monday Evening Quarterback for Ronnie.